Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the Closing Market Report. It is the 12th day of August, USDA Report Day in 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets and the reports with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois. And then later in the program, we'll hear from Dan Bossi, Jerry Goodell, and Daryl Good, along with Joe Prasaki. That'll all happen in the second half hour of the program. We call it The Farming World. And if you can't hear it on this radio station, you can always hear it online at willag.org. That's willag.org. As we close out the first half hour of the program, don't forget we'll talk about the agricultural weather forecast with Pete Levitt, agricultural meteorologist, on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from L&M Commodities, a full-service brokerage company serving area farmers with professional market advice and crop insurance products. L&M Commodities has offices in New Market, Indiana, Leland, Illinois, and Terrell, Arkansas.
Taking a look at the numbers as they settled up in Chicago on a Thursday afternoon, USDA report day, the Kansas City Board of Trade wheat settled 15 cents higher at 725. The Board of Trade in Chicago at the CME Group up 18 and a quarter at 713 for the nearby September. September corn at 406 and a quarter, up 10 and three quarters today. December at 421 and three quarters, 10 and three quarters higher. And the March at 434 and three quarters, 10 and a half cents higher. May futures at 442, up a dime on the day. And next year's December corn futures settled at 437 and three quarters, up six and three quarters. August soybeans, 1057, up 12 and a half. The September's at 1026. 9.5 cents higher. November at 1028.5, up 13. And January futures, $10.35 a bushel, up 13.5 cents. March corn, or rather March soybeans at 1036.75 settlement price, up 12.5 cents. And the bean meal, August contract, $3.15.40, up $4.90. August bean oil at $41.09, down 54 cents on the afternoon. August feeder cattle, a settlement price at $94.20, up 25 for the day. The October at $95.30, a nickel lower. August feeders at $111.97.5, down 57.5. September's at $111.72.5, down 82.5. And the August lean hog futures at $82.20, 100 pounds, 75 cents the gain on this Thursday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, September contract, $75.74 a barrel. A loss today, down $2.28. Ethanol at $1.74.08, up two and seven tenths. Natural gas at $4.29.4, down 3 2/10. And the heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.02, down 7 2/10 cents. Gold futures at $1,214.80 an ounce, up $17.30. The Dow at 10,319, just about 60 points lower. The dollar at 82.62 is up 0.33 on the afternoon. And the Goldman Sachs at 514.81 is down 6.18 for the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast for Urbana-Champaign and the surrounding area looks like today. Mostly sunny skies, a high near 94 for the afternoon. Heat indexes will climb really high to 106 or better. Tonight, mostly clear, a low around 73, light east-southeast winds. And then tomorrow, mostly sunny skies again. It'll be hot, a high of near 95. Heat index values about 106 again. Southeast winds between 5 and 8 miles an hour. Then Friday night, partly cloudy, a low around 75. South-southeast winds around 7 miles an hour. And Saturday, a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Mostly cloudy skies on Saturday. The high of 93, south-southwest winds at 7 to 11 miles an hour. The extended forecast says Saturday night will be mostly clear with a low of 70. Sunday, mostly sunny, a high of 88. Sunday night, partly cloudy, a low of 65. And Monday, mostly sunny, a high of 85. Monday night, cloudy, a low of 62. Tuesday, sunny, 86 for the high. Tuesday night, partly cloudy, a low of 65. And Wednesday, mostly sunny, and a high of 84. More on the ag weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
This is the Closing Mark Report from Illinois Public Media in Urbana-Champaign on the U of I campus. I'm Todd Gleason. On the phone line with us today, Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
Fun day to watch the marketplace, I suppose.
Yeah, it was. Very interesting day. I mean, for the most part, I think USJA's production estimates was a non-event. The trade, I think, pretty well had those numbers pegged since it's a population count multiplied by, you know, an ear weight and pod count, whatever you want to do. So a lot of your, you know, 165 bushel yield per acre, I think, was pretty well worked in. You had the big guns like FC Stone and Infoma Economics up there around 166. Soybean, same way, up there in that 44 range. The news is that the trade, I don't think, was expecting USDA to recognize the drop of the Soviet Union crop or former Soviet Union crop as quickly as they did. And that is what shrunk the balance sheets, both corn and wheat. So that made those look very attractive. I mean, any time you shrink ending stocks, the market has to respond to the upside on that, and that's kind of where we did on the corns. And, you know, for the most part, I think the trade's feeling that the demand is still stronger yet. USDA still has a way to go yet to catch up on demand in, on corn and soybeans, so I think that is what propelled this rally higher.
Well, let me go through some of the numbers. You gave some of them, but here they are as they were released from the United States Department of Agriculture this morning at 7:30 a.m. Crop production. Corn expected to raise 165 bushel to the acre national yield with a total record-setting crop. This would be the number one ever at 13.365 billion bushels. On beans, another record-setter, a 44 bushel to the acre crop nationwide with a 3.43 billion bushel crop to be harvested yet this fall. Ending stocks for this year, a 1.425 billion bushel ending stocks for corn. That's down from the 1.478 that was predicted in July. Soybeans this year at 160 million, down from the July estimate of 175. And then for next year, a 1.312 ending stock, or 1.312 billion bushels left. That's down from the 1.373 in July. And next year's soybeans were left the same as they were in July at 360 million. And then, of course, you took up the numbers from the USDA and the WASDE report that showed a reduction in the crop in Russia, Kazakhstan, and Ukraine. Are all those numbers right? They were down about 15%, I think, for each of those countries.
I think there's room for them to go down further. USDA has, you know, they dropped them 13 million tons from last month, and from a year ago, they're down 27 million tons. I think there's more to go on that. And, of course, USDA dropped the Canadian wheat crop down 6.5. So you had a, you know, from a year ago. Now, they did bump up the EU 27, 3 million tons, so you kind of had a net change about 30 million tons or thereabouts. I think there's further to go, and I think that's what the market's going to respond to and react to as we go down the road.
I don't have it in front of me at the moment, but I think that the global ending stocks on wheat was about 173 million metric tons. Is that correct? You have that number there?
Well, probably someplace, but I didn't.
Anyway, it dropped pretty dramatically, but it wasn't as low as, I think, 163 in 08 or 07 when we really jumped things up. It's not quite that low. So the question really is, given the numbers that were dropped out of USDA on the global side, and total wheat supply around the planet, have we rallied enough at this point since July? Obviously not for the day, but are we pretty close to rallying enough to take care of rationing that supply out?
What are you trying to do, pick a top here, Todd?
I'm just asking the question, man.
I don't think so. I know Farmer Market Advisor Services are trying to pick the top, and they've been getting kicked in the teeth. Send money to Chicago, but I don't think so. I mean, I think the trade is going to anticipate some better numbers again in September. I'm not sure the trade is solely convinced USDA's yield estimates will hold up in the long run. I do think that the market isn't going to go straight up. It's going to, you know, go up. It's going to consolidate. But I think as you look at down the road of food demand coming out of Asia and then the big drop in the former Soviet Union, the market is going to respond to the upside to encourage wheat acres this fall in the U.S. It's going to encourage corn plantings, so it's going to encourage farmers to book seed, going to put fertilizer on. Soybeans are going to have to probably step up and carry their weight, or they're going to lose some acres. The demand out of Asia is going to require a big crop out of South America, and we need another big crop out of North America next year. So I think we're just in one of these eras that we just got growing food demand, and that's going to be supportive to commodities, and that's why the market reacts highly to record production estimates.
Are you still in giddy-up mode?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's counter-seasonal. Once the market begins to move counter-seasonal, you better get out of its way, because it's telling you that the underlying fundamentals are either stronger than what everybody thinks when it's moving counter-seasonal highly higher, or weaker than the market thinks when the market is moving counter-seasonally lower. And, you just don't want to buck a counter-seasonal move.
Okay, a couple of things. What do you think the size of the crop is for corn?
Well,
on a bushel day. So we've got a 165 from USDA. We've got some numbers from here on campus, and we'll hear Darryl Good talk about those. Because it's awfully low. We'll hear him talk about those just before we get to the top of the hour. So,
well, I think it's a mixed bag, and I guess I don't really have a big disagreement with 165 potential. I think we need some more favorable weather to top it out if we're going to finish it off at 165. But you hear stuff out in the field. You hear a lot from crop scouts. I think you're going to start hearing some different estimates as we go forward. This one here was just the population count multiplied by XYZ, and this is what we came up with. I think the 44 bushel bean acre estimate, I think we need a good Corn Belt rain if that's going to be realized. And if that would slip back a bushel, or let's say it slipped back two bushels, all of a sudden you're back to a 200 million bushel carryout on beans. So I think the trade, unless this weather forecast begins to become more favorable here to finish off the month of August, I think the trade will probably anticipate some lower numbers as we go into the September estimate.
Is it safe to say that you're only cautious about the corn number, and cautious to the upside, I mean, meaning that a 165 is fine, but it's really demand-driven? And so
this is a demand-driven market. It's a demand-driven market, and anybody that's focused and worried about production sizes, you can see where they got their clock clean today. If they were, wanting to be bearish on a record U.S. Production estimate, the story has been for the last 30 days or 6 weeks has all been outside of the U.S. It all started basically this spring when Canada could not get all of their canola acres planted on the oilseed front, and then they've got a drop in wheat acres and wheat production, and now you got the former Soviet Union wheat production coming down. Demand for soybeans was so strong, the South American crop just evaporated into the marketplace. Now there's still some South American inventories around, but the demand side of the equation is so strong. And, I mean, this is actually good times. Farmers got a good crop. They're going to have good prices. And there's good world buyers underneath the market. So, I mean, this ought to be a boom to U.S. agriculture while the rest of the economy, I guess, sinks into the sewer, I guess, the way things look at least at the moment. But ag looks to be pretty good at this point.
And I said a couple of questions. Something that came out in the CME press briefing this morning, Dan Bossian made mention of this, and we'll hear it at about 20 minutes on this program, that it, to him, it looked like the export channels in the United States were going to clog up pretty good, that there would be so much grain and oil seeds headed down to the export market in New Orleans and out the Pacific Northwest that it might be tough to get things out. What are you hearing internally there? You have a
well. Why would that be bearish if you've got so much demand
I just asked the question.
I mean, I think that tells you. I mean, if you got so much demand that you can't take it out of the country, I mean, that tells you that you're building up a vacuum. I mean, I don't see how that would be bearish.
He did make note that it was bearish. He just made note that it was there, was all. And he did,
well,
he didn't say, and neither did I.
So. Well, I mean,
I'm just asking. I'm asking is, you have a fleet, ADM does, so is this a problem?
I don't know if it's going to be a much of a problem. A lot of that is going to depend upon how the harvest comes off. I know a lot of people are anticipating a quick harvest, but who's to say the weather pattern doesn't flip-flop back the other way when we're getting ready to harvest like it did last year, and all of a sudden harvest is more of a prolonged situation rather than a rapid harvest. But, you know, anytime you have a strong demand in one side of the sector or the other, you're always going to have stress points. And but I don't really see that as a big problem. I mean, I think a lot of the problems could be on the harvest front. We still have a lot of old crop inventory around in certain areas. I'm not too sure that there's going to be. I think a lot of elevators are still going to shut down if harvest goes real quick. They're not going to be able to handle the new inventory. So I think the bottleneck may come up, you know, at the country elevator level more so than maybe at the export channel.
Thanks so much for being with us today, Dan.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker is with ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report on a Thursday afternoon.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
Hi, this is Illinois Public Media Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey. Join us this afternoon for another one of our free Illinois Public Media Agricultural Outlook panels. We'll be at the Douglas County Farm Bureau offices this afternoon at 5 o'clock. That's a change from previously announced, where we were going to be in Irvin Park in Tuscola. Instead, at the Douglas County Farm Bureau offices, panelists for today's meeting include Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities, Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson Group, and Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities. That's at the Douglas County Farm Bureau offices this afternoon at 5 o'clock. The meeting is free, no advance registration for the meeting, and we hope to see you there.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. In a moment, we'll take up the Freedom to Farm legislation, which was adopted by the U.S. Congress back in 1995. It discarded many of the restrictions that had previously caused farmers not to change crop. In light of today's USDA report, I thought it might be interesting to hear how, under Freedom to Farm and all the farm bills since that time, producers have been able to participate in the farm programs and still make their own cropping choices. As you'll hear, the U of I has released a study that's looked at how those acreage patterns have shifted in the United States since Freedom to Farm. The 1995 Freedom to Farm Act gave producers the option to plant what they believed to be their most competitive crops and still participate in the farm program. That choice tenet still underlies today's Farm Bill legislation, and when comparing the five-year period just before its enactment to the last 5 years, 2005, 6, 7, 8, and 9, there are clear-cut winners and losers in terms of crops and acreage, says University of Illinois Farm Management Specialist Gary Schnittke.
What we saw is a movement towards soybeans and corn, and soybeans from gained 14 million acres from the early period to 2005 to 2009. Corn gained 9 million. So those two crops were the only crops that gained in acres. The other crops, hay and rice, were stable, but the big losers were wheat, barley, and grain sorghum.
Again, when comparing the era from 1990 to 94 to 2005 to 2009, soybeans and corn grew in acres. Crops losing acres were wheat, barley, and grain sorghum, along with corn silage, cotton, peanuts, dry edible beans, and potatoes. To evaluate acreage changes, data detailing acres harvested in the United States by year were obtained from the National Agricultural Statistics Service. Data were collected for all crops with over 1 million acres harvested in 2008. There were 13 of them: soybeans, corn for grain, hay, rice, wheat, barley, grain sorghum, corn for silage, cotton, peanuts, dry edible beans, potatoes, and sugar beets. Acres harvested were averaged for the years 1990 through 94, the years preceding the passage of the 1995 Farm Bill, and 2005 through 2009. Between the early 90s and the late 2000s, soybeans were the crop with the largest acreage increase. It averaged 58.2 million acres harvested in the early 1990s, increasing to 72.2 million acres in the late 2000s. It's a 14 million acre increase, or about 25%. Corn also had a sizable increase of 9.4 million acres, or about 14% from one period to the other. Wheat had the largest reduction, from 62.8 million acres to 50.7 million acres, or down 19%. The data, says Schnittke, shows the largest increases in corn and soybean acreages were concentrated in the Great Plains and the greater Corn Belt.
The state that gained the most in corn and soybean acres was North Dakota, gained 4 million acres. And other big gainers were Minnesota, South Dakota, Nebraska, and Kansas.
Again, the commodities with the largest gains over the period pre- and post-Freedom to Farm were soybean and corn. Wheat, barley, grain sorghum, corn for silage, and cotton experienced the largest losses. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and Moline. More information is available from Tim Wells in Moline at 309-797-7369. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon, USDA Report Day. When we return, we'll talk about the agricultural weather forecast. And then in the second half hour, Dan Bossi will be here, along with Jerry Goodell from the CME Group's press briefing this morning. Joe Persaki will join us from Washington, D.C. to talk about the reports. And Daryl Good will join us, too. That all happens in the next half hour here on the Closing Market Report. Please do stay with us.
It's National Toasted Almond Bar Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1759, Thomas Andrew Knight was born. A British horticulturalist, he initiated the field of fruit breeding, and he investigated the use of greenhouses, plant nutrition, fertilization, and pest control. In 1812, Ephraim Ball was born. An American inventor, he was responsible for creation and manufacture of the Ball's Blue Plow. He also patented what was the first widely successful two-wheel flexible bar mower. In 1851, Isaac Singer was granted a patent for the first sewing machine with a double rocking treadle. In 1948, Harry Beardsley died. He invented stainless steel in 1912. The discovery of the steel, chromium, and nickel alloy revolutionized the cutlery industry. The added metals produced a surface much more rust-resistant than steel alone. And in 2004, Anthony John Clark died, an English molecular biologist. He was a founder of applying molecular technology to farm animals. In 1990, he was successful in producing a sheep giving milk with human proteins. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media on this Thursday afternoon. We're joined by Pete Levitt to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Hi, Pete. How are you today?
I'm good, Todd.
Let's start here in the Midwest. It's hot.
And it is hot and it is humid.
Is it going to stay that way?
One more day. Then it's cooling off. We've got a very bright picture from Sunday forward for a few days. But right now we've got dew points in the 70s with temperatures in the 90s and a few hundreds showing up downstate. It's a really hot and sticky day. There's a frontal system working into western Iowa later today and tonight, which will produce showers across the northern half of Iowa tomorrow. That's been the wet spot in the Midwest, there in southern Minnesota. And then that front continues eastward on Friday night and Saturday. And so we have one more hot day and Friday ahead of that front. And then on Saturday, the front comes through Illinois. We get some showers. I don't think anything very heavy. They may be some locally strong, but not a lot of heavy rain. And then on Sunday, we start to clear out. And we get drier weather, temperatures in the 80s, Sunday through Thursday. Looks like just ideal summer weather.
Ideal summer weather, but after all this heat, even with the humidity, it would be nice to have an inch or so. Do you think we'll be able to buy one anytime soon?
Some places will. The problem is we're dealing with persistence this year, and the wet get wetter and the dry get drier. We'll get some. I think maybe a quarter to three-quarters of an inch is not out of the question for Saturday and Saturday night. But they'll get a lot more in Iowa, and then up in southern Minnesota, western Wisconsin, you'll look for 2 to 4 inches of rain in these heavy storms, this area that's had plenty of rain already this season. So it's as I say, the wet stays wetter, and it's not going to produce too much, but a little bit. It'll just be a lick and a promise, I think, before the weather turns beautifully pleasantly mild with dry humidity.
Then turn your attention to Russia, the former Soviet system. Tell me a little bit about the area there. It's a large production area, and so a large geographic area. I'm not quite certain how big, but it's very large.
Oh, yeah, it is very large. It's winter wheat in the Ukraine and parts of southern Russia and in the Caucasus. But when you get a little further north and east of that, it's mostly spring wheat country. The winter wheat wouldn't survive the typical winter. So from there on east, you're dealing with spring wheat. And the crop that's been having the problem is the maturing winter wheat. It's been just droughty in Russia itself, the country of Russia, and also parts of Kazakhstan and the North Caucasus have been very dry. And so they've lost, some estimates, maybe they've lost about a third of the crop. But now you go a little bit further east where you get into spring wheat country, and there it's been a transition to a cooler and wetter pattern, and there you have almost ideal growing conditions, maybe even a little too cool in what's called the Newlands area to the east because they need a longer growing season. But the problem is in the winter wheat areas, which have just been scorched this year.
Thank you so much, and we appreciate you taking the time with us.
My pleasure.
That's Pete Levitt, agricultural meteorologist, joins us here on the Closing Market Report. Stay with us if you can for the Farming World. This is the Farming World News and Information from the Land Grant in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason. We'll continue our conversation about the reports released today from USDA. Those are the crop production and WASDE, or World Agricultural Supply and Demand estimates. Not long after they came out at 7:30 Central Time, the CME group at the Chicago Board of Trade floor held a press conference. The guests for that conference included Jerry Goodell of North America Risk Management and Dan Bossi of Ag Resource Company. We'll hear a portion of the press conference and start with Dan's immediate reaction to the report.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for stopping by or watching us on your video link. Very interesting report this morning, and it really shows that the U.S. Is an island of supply, I think is the best way to put it. A record large corn yield, record large soybean yield, 165 in the corn, 44 in the beans, record large crops in both, and they will be needed. At the same standpoint, the USDA raised spring wheat yields and gave us an additional 49 million bushels, bumping up that crop. So even though acreage in spring wheat, in total wheat, was down 6.5 million acres from last year, we ended up with a crop far larger. So that being said, that is the island of supply in the United States, and we are looking at big demand forthcoming from that. And the reason being is if this report was done with normal Russian weather, we could all basically call it bearish and go home for the winter. Unfortunately, though, with the Russians having one of their worst droughts in decades, we now become the world's storefront in terms of grain and oilseed products. And so the USDA, I think, did a very good job, and maybe the most important elements of this report was indeed their adjustments, if you will, to our Russian and FSU 12 counterparts. They cut FSU 12 wheat production by 13 million metric tons. That's a record in my data from a July to an August crop report. They took a machete to the Russian wheat crop, dropping it 8 million metric tons, down pretty much in line with what our private people have it at 45 million metric tons. They dropped the Kazakh crop to 11.5, that's down 2.5, and Ukrainian crops down 3. So, again, these are significant drops along the FSU. They are still carrying the Kazakhs and Ukrainians as exporters of wheat and corn. That is to be debated in coming months, but nonetheless, a big reduction in world wheat end stocks drops accordingly to somewhere in the vicinity of where we hear, you know, in the 170s. And so a big drop in wheat. Paris wheat this morning when I left was up about $4.50. It's kind of been the leader in the markets. Synthetically, in some of the swap markets, we were trading up somewhere in the vicinity of 5 to 10 cents in wheat. The swap market in corn was somewhere offered at unchanged bid down at about 4 to 5 cents. Beans were down about 5 to 8 cents. So we could have a mixed opening here, but there's plenty of fodder for everyone. And the big question going forward is going to be what to do with corn and soybean crops. Do they increase in September and October, or do they decrease? Historically speaking, there is a precedence in the last 7 years for them to increase. We'll see how weather finishes out here in the end of August, and we kind of go forward from there. But the key element for me anyway was this dire Russian crop loss of 8 million metric tons and the sharp fall in world stocks, and in particular the big increase in U.S. wheat exports of 200 million bushels, with 100 of that coming in protein wheat, HRW. My view is that the world comes to us for protein wheat, for milling wheat. That's what the Russians export. And until we get into the southern hemisphere harvest down south in Australia and Argentina in December and January, the big question is going to be, can our export facilities at the Gulf and PNW handle all the business from China in beans, the world in wheat, and then the increase in feed grains from a host of sectors around the world? One of the problems I'm having as an analyst right now is my commercial friends keep telling me that the Gulf and PNW are pretty much sold out of fobbing capacity. By that, I'm saying loadout from now until the middle of December. If that's the case and the Chinese are buying 1 million tons of beans a week, the corn demand export profile is shifting upwards, as we saw with sales this morning, and we now have wheat for sale, it's a lot of pressure on our export profile to get it all out the door from now until when Latin America comes on board in mid or late December.
Again, that's Dan Bossi of AgriSource Company speaking at the CME Group press conference this morning, not long after the release of the USDA reports. Jerry Goodell of North America Risk Management was on hand as well. They both fielded a question from the press on $4 and $10 crops, that's corn and beans respectively, and whether that might be the minimum price seen at the Chicago Board of Trade between now and spring of next year.
Jerry, do you want to go first?
All right. I've been kind of peeking around the corner here because we do have harvest coming at us here near term. As I mentioned, we've got some harvesting going on in the Mid-South right now on soybeans. In general, I think you're right. The $4 and $10 are there. I think in the near-term situations here, though, I think you have some downside issues on soybeans. If we're cooling off next week in the U.S., the moisture situations don't look like they're going to be that great for the Eastern Corn Belt, but at least we're going to get some of the stifling heat and humidity out of the air. And so in that world, I sense that we potentially might have some pullback possibilities into the next week or even in the first part of September here from that standpoint. My downside situation, though, on soybeans is in around the 950 zone right now, 950, 960, 65 maybe. Not that far away, really speaking. Corn, we do have same issues there, too. We got a big crop projected at us here in the 165 yield and that. And I'd anticipate that also to pull back here, back towards the 375, maybe 365, 375 zone. I'm not sure that at one time I thought 350 was going to be a possibility, but I think that's out the window here with the export demand structures it is right now, because there's just going to be too many people need to get this stuff moved through the system. But I definitely encourage the producers to buy that setback. And the same situation, if there's opportunities here in the 425 to 440 zone to sell corn in the next 10 days, they're up till September for some reason rather than weather. If something doesn't happen, cool off next week in Russia or here. And soybeans, I'd be taking advantage of the current prices to have everything tidied up. Don't be anticipating the fact that these prices are going to always be here every day. We're also impacted by the world economics.
Dan?
Yeah, I mean, I think Jerry did a great job, and he and I are pretty close on downside potentials. I've been using 370 to 385 on spot corn futures. I've been using 940 to 960 on beans. I've been using about 650 to 630 on spot. Part I have, which is, are we in a deflationary world, and what do grain prices mean in a deflationary world? I mean, $4 corn, $10 beans are already pretty doggone high, historically speaking. If the world is slipping and the U.S. economy is slipping into deflation and the Chinese economy is cooling, how does that manifest itself? I don't know if we really know. I know I don't know as an analyst, but it's something that I think we've got to watch day to day and week to week in terms of gauging market mentality and whether our fund buyers turn into fund sellers at some point as they want to bank some profits.
Again, that's Dan Bossi of the AgriSource Company out of Chicago, Illinois, along with Jerry Goodell of North American Risk Management at the CME Group's press conference this morning. They held that not long after the United States Department of Agriculture released the latest crop production and WASDE numbers. Speaking of the crop production report, on hand with us from Washington, D.C., back up after probably getting a little sleep from lockup overnight, is Joe Persaki from USDA NAS. Joe, thanks for being with us today.
Sure, Todd. No problem.
Hey, I want to go through some numbers with you because this is a big corn crop. It's a big bean crop, but I found it fairly interesting. Let's see. We've got California, Washington, North Dakota, Nebraska, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, and Ohio, I think that's all of them, all have brand new record high yields per acre this year. Illinois is at 180, Indiana is at 176. And the big one is Washington at 220 per acre, but they don't raise that much in total production.
Right.
So there's some awful good numbers out there. What precipitated that number? We got higher counts for ears per acre, higher number of stocks per acre. What was it that the USDA found and NAS found when they went in the field?
Yeah, basically, Todd, when we went out there, is that we're seeing that the stocks per acre, you know, we talk about, you know, like the plant population going up. We saw a leveling off on the plants, and then the ears per acre pretty much on par. I'm not sorry, the ears per acre, yeah, pretty much on par with what we saw last year. Where things are coming in this time, again, you know, it's all about grain weight. And this year, you know, normally in August, we'll, you know, because the crop is fairly immature on our objective yield, we'll have a five-year average. Well, this year, the corn crop is quite a bit further along compared to previous years, and we started moving into, instead of using the five-year average, we're looking at our what's called kernel row length, and then the diameter of the ears to come up with a measure of volume. So, you know, the crop's more further along this year, and we're picking up that information using actual measurements of ears.
And then I've got a question that came in from a listener called yesterday afternoon when he heard that you were going to be on the show. Wanted to know why it was that USDA, NASS, and FSA couldn't get together more quickly than they do with the acreage numbers. Those numbers have been reported to US or to FSA. Why does it take? I think they don't show up until when, October usually, is that correct?
That's correct. For corn and beans, NASS can, and in recent years has, we've adjusted corn and soybean acres for the October crop report based primarily on FSA certified planted area. And the question is, and I get this question quite a bit, why does not NASS use that information earlier? Well, for example, we have access to the FSA data on an ongoing basis. Basically, it's an aggregate level. We look at the U.S. and state totals for various commodities. And I've got the three most recent weeks of FSA data. This is like the week for like July 27th, August 3rd, and August 10th. And it's interesting, in that three-week time frame, this kind of illustrates why we do not use that FSA data right now. For corn, in that 2 weeks, we've watched it grow, use the word grow, 2.4 million bushels just in that 2 weeks. For soybeans, we've watched
you
it grow.
Acres.
We've watched it grow 1.4 million acres, and soybeans, we've watched it grow 2 plus million acres just in 2 weeks. The farmers have to have their data in with FSA, but it takes them a while to process that information, and we watch it. We watch it grow, and then when it gets to a certain point, okay, we trust the number that it's not going to grow anymore, and then we've watched it. It's generally in that late September time frame.
One final question for you, and we have maybe a minute left or so. Is this year going to be easier for NASS to collect data, and was it easier this time around, do you think, for your state statisticians to pick up data from?
Well, I mean, the crop was further along, so any time, like, say, for corn, being the crop's further along, it's, you know, the numerators are able to pick up more information, like on corn, ears especially, you know, which starts, you know, giving us a lot more better information about the size of the crop, more so than in recent years. That's the key thing. The crop is much more mature than we've seen in recent time frames.
Thank you so much, Joe.
Hey, thanks, Don.
Mm-hmm. Get some sleep. Joe Prusaki is with USDA NASS. He was in lockup last night in Washington, D.C. before the crop production and world agricultural supply and demand estimate reports were released. When we come back, we'll have a discussion with Daryl Good. Most of you know that the FarmDoc site came out with a 158 to 160 on, or rather, 158 to 160 on the corn crop. That's a bit lower than, of course, USDA's 165. We'll ask him about that when we return right here on The Farming World.
This is Illinois Public Media Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey. In business news, Sara Lee says it returned to profitability in the fourth quarter after a quarter last year weighed down by a big tax charge. The maker of Jimmy Dean sausages earned $187 million, or 28 cents per share, for the quarter ending July 3rd. Last year, the company lost $14 million, or 2 cents a share. Revenue rose 4.2% to $2.8 billion. French-based analyst Strategic Grains today cut its estimate for this year's European Union soft wheat crop for the second straight month. The French analyst now sees the 27-member EU's soft wheat production at 128.2 million tons, 1.3 million tons less than forecast last month. It reduced forecasted output for Bulgaria, Hungary, and Romania by 1.4 million tons in view of heavy rain. About 60% of the wheat area in the EU has been harvested as of August 6th. Chai Corn Network officials say China's corn supply is expected to remain tight in the coming year that starts from October, although output this year is on track to rise from 2009 because of acreage increases. Chinese users from the feed mill sector are keen to buy more U.S. corn because of strong demand. And that's a look at today's business news.
Learnard Seed Service supports agricultural programs as an additional service to its customers. Learnard Seed Service is an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Genuity SmartStax corn hybrids, to farmers throughout East Central Illinois. Learnard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to Agricultural Programming from Illinois Public Media. In studio with us, Daryl Good, ag economist from the U of I, to talk about this morning's USDA crop production and world agricultural supply and demand estimates. Which number dropped out at you as the most important of the two reports?
Well, to me, in terms of my expectation, is the corn yield number that probably stood out at 165 bushels. That wasn't too far above the average trade guess, maybe fairly close to the average trade guess, but was certainly well above what I expected to see, and maybe not so much in this report, but as a final yield estimate. So the really large corn crop stood out to me. Obviously, that's right now being offset by expectations that we will use that big crop during the coming year because of a continued strong domestic demand and growing exports of corn. So even though we have prospects for a huge corn crop, USDA is projecting a drop in inventories by the end of the 2010 marketing year.
The University of Illinois model showed a much smaller crop. You released some of those numbers earlier in the week. They've made their way across the countryside. Many are talking about that 158 to 160. What's the difference, and tell me about the model?
Well, first of all, you say it's kind of ironic that our models worked exceptionally well for soybeans. We were almost dead on the USDA number with our soybean model, but the corn model came in well below USDA's August forecast. And if you look at the details of our model, yields, corn yields get penalized with too much rain in June, which we had this year, and they get penalized with above normal summer temperatures, which we've had June, July, and August, all 3 months above average temperature. So based on historical relationships between those weather variables and yield, the model penalized the forecast this year quite a bit. It appears that it maybe was an over-penalization of that, but it also suggests that we might see USDA's final yield number a bit lower than the current 165. I think August has not been ideal for development of the corn crop, and with the data collected for USDA's August number, 10, 12 days old, it does leave room for that number to come down a bit. I would be surprised if it would come all the way down to our number, but maybe we could see 2 or 3 bushels shaved off of that before it's said and done.
Many in the business, many producers are now, they're feeling fairly bullish, the corn and the bean market for that matter. Much of that has to do with the export problems of wheat out of Russia. Well, there's been a fairly good rally in that marketplace. Do you think that is their bullishness misplaced, or should it be that way at this point?
No, I think bullishness is probably justified given the demand prospects that we have. I mean, I think what the current balance sheet suggests is that we can hold corn prices, you know, at or above current levels. I'm not sure it points to substantially higher prices, but it does suggest that we can maintain these higher price levels, particularly in the corn and wheat markets for now. You would have to argue that the balance sheet on face value is not all that supportive for soybean prices with some buildup in inventory. When we're kind of the only country around of the major exporters that have supply this year, that puts us in pretty good shape.
You, in the first quarter of this year, told us that you thought China would be back in the market for soybeans by the time we rolled around to fall. Did you expect to see them quite this early?
Well, it is a bit surprising. I mean, given the size of the South American crop, that they are still buying quite a bit of U.S. soybeans. And, of course, we have seen them enter the corn market as well. So I think just Chinese demand in general continues to be surprisingly strong.
Yeah, and is that a peg that you'd like to hang higher prices on?
I think it's potentially that. USDA is still not forecasting huge corn imports by China, although some in the private sector think it will eventually happen, if not this year, then within the near future, that China will need some corn from the U.S., and even if that's a relatively modest 200 or 300 million bushels at the margin, I think that makes a lot of difference. It does suggest that we're going to have to continue to expand corn acres a bit here in the U.S. to keep up with near-term growth in domestic demand coming from the ethanol industry and also a potential for some growth in exports.
When we started the rally, the big rally or the change in the marketplace, 07, 08, maybe earlier than that, we talked about new plateaus. Your suggestion was 350 to 550 with 450 as a mid-range point. USDA has 410 on the top side for the coming crop. Do you think we can make 450? Is that plateau range correct, or is it lower?
You know, I think the range is correct. In hindsight, you would have to say maybe using the midpoint of around $4.50 corn has turned out to be too optimistic. And in my mind, part of that is associated with the economic downturn that we've seen since we put those forecasts together. We kind of assumed at that point that the world economies would remain robust, and that would add to the strength of demand for agricultural commodities. As it's turned out, that has not been the case. And so if we do get back into more strength in the U.S. and world economies, then I think prices routinely above $4 is probably where we're at.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Darrell Good, ag economist from the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason.